I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
Raiders! You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. I'm RJ Clifford. He's Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Just 2 days removed, not even two full days removed from the Raiders putting a curb stomping on the Ravens. Like I said, all offseason long, nobody was going to come into Allegiant Stadium, first game with fans, and beat the Raiders. We may go 1-16 for the season, but nobody was going to beat the Raiders in Allegiant Stadium, first home game with fans. Lord knows the Raiders tried to lose that game multiple times.
Yeah, but despite their best efforts, they still won.
But we persevered. Yeah. Damn it. That's what we do.
I am still fully engorged from that game. I want you to know that.
Yeah, my plums are still a bluish hue from that amazing night.
I have not been able to sleep on my stomach
Yeah, right. I have no fear of rolling out of bed because of a kickstand that's keeping me there. We finally had 45 or so hours to kind of digest everything that happened. We'll get to like all the injuries. Like it was a win, but it cost us in a lot of ways, health wise. But it was cool hearing yesterday to recording this on Wednesday. So on Tuesday, normally like mainstream sports radio, I don't really listen to. It's mostly like podcasts, like, Raider specific or MMA specific stuff, but just listening to just regular ESPN, Mad Dog Radio on Sirius XM, everyone talking about Raiders, Derek Carr, John Gruden. And we see this every single season after a big win, because like, remember last season we had some really big wins, right? Mm-hmm. Holding the Browns to six, beating the Saints out of the gate was big. Like, we had moments where people beating the Chiefs, around. Like everyone was talking in prime time. That's the other thing. Like Derek Carr just like thrives in prime time. Like if kickoff comes after the sun goes down, he's like 8-2 or some like great, recently, like some great number in prime time. It was cool seeing mainstream sports react to the Raiders and all the things they did well, but you can tell there was still a very tempered feeling to everything they're saying. Like, oh, they did great. Is Derek Carr top 10? Oh, the Raiders did great. Is John Gruden on the hot seat? It's a very like acknowledging what they accomplished, but people are still outside looking in, still looking at the Raiders, what, the last few seasons of the record says they are.
Yeah. I mean, if you and I are smart, we'd do the same thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's keep seeing it. These are the things that we saw that contributed to our victory. Let's go ahead and keep that going. Let's not let these falter. Let's not make these positives negatives in future games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. If you don't really follow a team that well, if you don't really follow Carr and you just hear things you hear from the mainstream media about him, this game is surprising to you. And yeah. I mean, when it's not surprising to you and I mean, we've seen him have games like this before. Mm-hmm. It all depends on how he wants to play. And he came out thick-dicked, and that's how the results weren't there in the beginning. But it got a lot better as the game went on.
Yeah, that's probably the nicest thing I've ever heard you say about Derek Carr. So it's nice to see the healing is starting to actually go somewhere and work with you. I mean, because like, look how much he had to overcome. No run game to speak of. Offensive line getting hurt right out of the gate. His two second-year receivers are supposed to be the future of our receiving core, complete ghosts until the fourth quarter and overtime. Even Waller, who's best player on their team, started off rough. He had a case of the dropsies early on. Derek Carr overcame all of that. The defense did their part. Guys stepped up when they needed to, absolutely. But Derek Carr was the glue that kept that offense together over the course of that game. And of course, like you said, he was even in that first quarter, he was even worse than he was against Tampa Bay last season, which was at the time the worst I'd ever seen him play.
The only difference between the Monday night game and the Falcons game last year was the fumbles. Yeah. He didn't fumble, but passing wise, it was the same shit.
If the game started, you'd say, all right, one of the quarterbacks is going to fumble twice. And be like, damn it. All right, that's definitely Derek Carr. Nope. No fumbles from Derek Carr. One interception, which was 100% Willie Snead's fault. Like, so many times passes are like, okay, that was 90-10, the quarterback. Oh, that was, you know, 50-50, the quarterback quarterback and receiver. That was 100% Willie Snead. So that was the biggest thing, right? What's the biggest knock we've had on Derek Carr? Turnovers. Fumbles, mm-hmm. turnovers. Even the biggest car lovers acknowledge it's a major problem.
Yeah.
No turnovers were his fault in that game, which is fantastic. Just another thing about him as a leader. Here's Derek Carr immediately after the game doing his post game interview.
Take me through the touchdown pass to Zay Jones. It wasn't to Waller. It wasn't to Ruggs. It wasn't to Edwards. It was to Zay Jones.
That's right. Beautiful thing about that is there was an audible that Coach told me, hey, during the week, if we ever get this look, get ready for this play. And Zay Jones was in. Zay Jones, since he got to our team, every time I ask him to throw, he's there at 6 a.m. Every time. He's never missed one. So to see him come up with a game winner like that, last two times we've been Monday night, he has 2 touchdowns. I hope everyone in the world roots for Zay Jones because he works harder than anybody on our team.
It's weak.
That is a leader. That is a leader. What'd you think? Oh, you know, I saw it. You know, I threw a perfect ball, nailed it perfectly. Nope. He's like, hey, Zay Jones, a guy who's like been on the bubble of making the roster every season. All credit to him. All credit to him. He's the hardest worker. And this was a message to the rest of the team. He's the hardest worker on the team. Every time I say, let's go, let's throw the ball, he's there. 6 a.m. every single morning. Hey, guys, this is what Zay's doing. And look at the opportunities he's getting. This is how hard Zay Jones is working. He's getting the spotlight. He's winning game winners in overtime on Monday Night Football in prime time at the first game at Allegiant Stadium with fans. He got that moment because he bust his ass. That is a message to the rest of the team. That is a call to action in the most positive way possible. Not, hey guys, you guys are lazy. Zay Jones isn't. It's look what Zay Jones has done. Look at this amazing Zay Jones. Look at this incredible thing he did. Why? Because he busts his ass, and then the rest of the players can understand the rest.
That's how you have a culture shift in an organization. Mm-hmm. Is you make the hardest worker, you make that the baseline now.
Yep.
Zay Jones is now the baseline. Everyone has to catch up to him, and let's see who can outwork him. So that's what Carr was doing right there. Is he was telling, okay, this is what he does. That's the baseline. That's what we expect out of everyone now. That type of work ethic. And that's the only way to turn around a culture of a franchise or a group is to change the expectations. And those expectations are now not raised up a notch.
So Carr, the leader, has been kind of under the radar, but those of us who've been paying attention understand. Like, Carr's a leader in his own way. That was a great example right there. Carr, the player, getting some more love from one of his biggest fans. Here's Kurt Warner on the NFL Network.
I loved what I saw from Derek Carr. And the biggest thing, I've always said this, I'm a big Derek Carr fan, but I believe he's a better and elite quarterback, as RG3 said right there, when he's aggressive, when he attacks down the field and he uses that big arm to make big plays. And although they started a little bit slow, that was his mentality from the get-go, was attack down the field, attack down the field. If I see man coverage or blitz, I am going to make you pay. And we saw it numerous times, saw it there in overtime, even before they scored the last touchdown, that throw down the sideline to Bryan Edwards, where he was just a little bit short. He was attacking in man-to-man coverage. And then, obviously, we're all thinking they're playing for a field goal at the end, but nope. We are going to go for the dagger, and let's finish this thing with a touchdown pass. So I love what I saw from Derek Carr and the way that they bounce back over and over and over again to find their way in the win column after week one.
Not only did he do all of that, but he did it when the defense knew they were passing, right? Like he threw the ball, 55? He dropped back like 59 times. Something like that. Like, you're not balanced anymore. You're going against one of the hardest blitzing teams in football, the most active blitzing team in football. Even knowing he's going to pass, even with your starting left guard not playing, your next guard out, a center who's had to fill the shoes of Rodney Hudson, rookie at right tackle, still delivered all of that. Derek Carr, the leader, Derek Carr, the tactician, was fully on display Monday night.
Yeah, and that's what I meant about a guy like when we saw now what we saw Derek Carr being able to put a team on his back and win a game. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about games that are going back and forth. The reason why he has a lot of fourth quarter comebacks is because the defense gives up a lot of leads late in the game. Like, we just happen to have the ball late, and he does what he does, and he's great against freaking NFL. Don't listen to this. Everyone else in the NFL, don't play prevent defense against Derek Carr.
Yeah.
He's fucking amazing.
Carver, you have like a six-legged turkey.
Yeah, it's crazy. He'll find anything you give him, he'll take it and more. What I meant was we haven't seen this 55 passing yards. Running backs aren't effective. I have to pass the ball. I have to push the ball down the field. We haven't seen that type of game. Even in the 2016 season, we had, you know, what was Latavius Murray was the one running the ball for us that year. That's what I meant when I said we saw finally Derek Carr being able to play outside of a scheme and mm-hmm. win games. And that was throughout the game. This is what I was saying from the beginning of the show. He needs to push the ball down the field. He doesn't have to wait for players to be wide open to trust his receivers to push the ball down the field. Good things are going to happen when you have that type of talent at quarterback and that type of talent at receiver,
yeah.
whether it's be Waller or the receivers. Because
he pushes when it's Waller and Renfro, and he hasn't been pushing.
Edwards.
Late when he had to, right? Like fourth quarter. Yeah, he did. He did.
Those were 50-50 balls, dude. He was covered. Yeah. Those were not like he had a step. The Ruggs passes, he was open underneath. They were sagging back because they didn't want Ruggs to get behind him. So those were easier throws. But those Edwards throws, those were not easy throws. And he's pushing the ball down the field. He has confidence in Edwards, and he should have.
We got to get the find a way to initiate Derek Carr's clutch gene at the beginning of a game.
He tried. Right? He tried to push the ball. It didn't turn out, but he kept at it. He kept pushing the ball down the field, and good things started to happen. I feel like when he started being a little bit more diverse in his with his targets, he started getting better, not just trying to force feed Waller. Maybe that was a happy birthday gift to him, just giving him the ball every single play. Mm-hmm. But when he started to spread the ball out a little bit more and still pushing the ball down the field, that's when better things started to happen.
So we're going to start doing a new segment that you thought up, Soto. Yeah. And we're going to roll with it. It's called The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. I wish it was two positives and one negative for a game like that, but we're going one positive, two negatives. The Good, The Bad, The Ugly. Raiders versus Baltimore Ravens, Monday Night Football edition.
Well, the ugly doesn't necessarily have to mean on us, right?
Could just be a picture of you.
Picture of me, yeah. Picture of my butt cheeks. Okay, versus Baltimore, the good. We'll start with Derek Carr, 435 passing yards, two touchdowns. PFF having a 74.9 rating. PFF. So,
and most importantly, this many fumbles,
no turnovers. No.
Yep.
Dude, I'm not
the interception that wasn't his fault. Yeah, it shouldn't be counting.
Same thing. That's like blaming Carr for the James snap. That's like, come on, dude.
Yeah,
it's not his fault.
Something you would do as an old self, not this new falling in love with Derek Carr, Juan Soto. That's
existing. Dude. He fucking playing like I want him to play. What the hell? I'm not falling in love with the guy.
All you need for him to do is throw for 435 yards with a beat up offensive line, no run game on Monday Night Football against a great defense, and put the team on his shoulders and win. That's all you're asking. You're not asking a lot, Soto. Look, it's a very small ask.
I asked and he did it. So what the fuck you want? Okay. Also, the good. There's a lot of good in the last game. Waller, 10 catches, 105 yards, and a touchdown.
Yep. 19 targets. He had a little case of the dropsies.
He dropped three balls.
Like the greats do, he overcame it. Yeah. This is how good Darren Waller is in the eyes of John Gruden and how well he plays.
If you threw it 60 times, probably. You right, know, okay. And if you threw it 60 times, you know, you'd probably target him 29 times. I thought he mishandled a ball or two uncharacteristically. He had a penalty called back, a big catch and run. he's the best player I've ever coached. So I'm going to continue to look for him. And sorry about that, Vic, but you know, he's a hell of a player. He deserves some good looks.
The best player I ever coached. Did correct me if I'm wrong. He coached Jerry Rice for a season.
Tim Brown. At the same position.
It's just kind of look. It's great that they love Darren Waller, and I love how John Gruden's like, yeah, we threw it to him 19 times. We'll throw it to him 29 times next time. I don't get like, I love it. Wild. Love it. I'm. I feel like Gruden is smarter than most of the fan base. He's like, well, you got to make opportunities for Ruggs. Oh, you got to force the ball to Edwards. No, you don't. Nope. If they're not going to cover Waller, or even if they are covering Waller, it's with someone who can't cover him. Go to him 10 times a game, 20 times a game, 30 times a game. There's no distribution of wealth on this offense. You go to what works, right? Josh Jacobs wasn't running well. We stopped running Josh Jacobs.
Yeah.
Right?
And like just like you said, go while it works. It wasn't working in the first quarter, forcing the ball to Waller. They were blanketing him pretty good. So he started moving the ball around, and that opened up Waller later in the game. So yeah, keep feeding him if he's balling out. Yeah, keep feeding him.
And also, John Gruden saying he's the best player you've ever coached when he's most likely in the middle of a contract negotiation. Gruden the coach, love him. Gruden the GM,
not so much.
Yeah, you got to fall in like with your players. You can't fall in love with your players. No, and Gruden gets Twitter pated real easy.
For sure. All right, coming on. Moving on to the next one. Colton Miller. PFF ranked him 87.5 pass blocking, 76.4 run blocking, and 84.6 overall rating for the game. That is the highest rated player in the game for the Raiders was Mr. Colton Miller.
He's the anchor of the line now, right? I mean,
amazing. He's
the anchor. Richie Incognito can't stay healthy. Denzel Goodston can't stay healthy. Rookie at right guard, new center. He's the man, and he's playing like it.
Yep. Ingold. This is a stat that
he got a lot of passes his way.
He caught a lot of passes, but 73.2 pass blocking rating. That's big because when he's in the game, he's going to be expected to block. Here's one too. On the last clip. That was an amazing just sellout block by Kenyon Drake. He went across Derek Carr's face and dove at the blitzing linebacker. Amazing job by Drake. He had a 71.8 pass blocker rating. I'm not worried about his other stats. He'll get those stats. This is the main reason why he's on this team. He can catch the ball, and he's an excellent blocker in the backfield. All right, here we go with the defense. Good stuff. Max Crosby. Mad Max had 13 pressures in the game.
He was all up in the grill.
Almost every single play, he was there causing some havoc. He had two sacks.
What was that? What was that movie, Mr. Deeds, with Adam Sandler, where the butler kept like popping up out of nowhere and like shocking him? That was Max Crosby. Yeah, very sneaky. That was Max Crosby to Lamar Jackson, just like, hello, in your face. I'm at you again. Oh, hey, I'm taking you down.
Yeah, so he had 13 pressures total. That's two sacks, three quarterback hits, and eight hurries. And the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, Max Crosby.
If it weren't for Chandler Jones getting five sacks and just like and three of them in the first quarter, Crosby would be all anyone's talking about defensively this week.
For sure. In limited snaps, Carl Nassib, he had about 15, 16 snaps. He had four pressures, one sack, three hurries, and, of course, the forced fumble that helped us win that game. Man, 15 pass rush snaps. That's an excellent job by Carl Nassib. Like I mentioned to you in the post-game show, he could have had a couple of more sacks. He bull rushed the tackle. He bull rushed both of them, and the tackle ran into Lamar Jackson. So if he could have just reached around and grabbed Lamar Jackson. From around the.
So you're saying all Carl Nassib had to do was a reach around?
God damn it! Did I say that?
You said that, yeah.
Fuck. You know what I meant. God damn it!
All Carl Nassib had to do was a reach around, and he'd get a sack.
Jesus.
Look, RJ. Hey, you said it. You're the one that said it. I'm the one here trying to play it straight. You're the one that's trying to make all these sex jokes about Carl Nassib.
Stop it.
Very inappropriate. Right, 2021, Soto, grow up.
Okay, stop. So, overall, the defense, they had a 91.2 pressure rating. They pressured Lamar Jackson on the damn near 59%. So damn near 60% of his passes, he was getting pressured.
With blitzes. Gus Bradley blitzed like three times all game.
Officially three times.
Just with our defensive linemen, specifically Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby, just in the face of Lamar Jackson the whole way through. That's what built, and that's the whole foundation of our defense, right? If the defensive line can start doing things, it takes pressure off the linebackers, pressure off the DBs. Like, that was the whole theory, and it played out. Played out great.
Yeah, worked great for us. So that was the good. Here's the bad. Unfortunately, not everyone played great. Alex Leatherwood, he had a 34.1 pass blocker rating, a 39.4 overall rating.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up five pressures allowed. That's two hurries, one hit, two sacks, and two penalties. Not a great game by Alex Leatherwood.
And one of those penalties could have been disastrous. That false start on the one yard line.
Look, here's the thing, guys. As good as he is as a run blocker, and he played okay as a run blocker. He was like in the 60s, run blocking rating. But I think it was Carl Cochran talked about how smooth he was gliding out of his. I never saw it. Mm-hmm. I never saw that out of Alex Leatherwood. He was just a physical beast, and he played for a really good team. He's not a very good pass blocker. He needs better technique, and hopefully Tom Cable can turn him around. Because let's remember,
the
guys,
penalties. He got so many penalties in college.
Colt Miller did not have a great rookie season. All right,
he played hurt,
and he didn't have a great rookie year, and he just kept getting better and better working with Tom Cable. So hopefully Tom Cable could turn him around. Even more startling, I think, because of where he plays, is James had a 28.5 run blocking rating, terrible run blocking rating,
mm-hmm.
35.6 overall, the lowest on the team, one muff snap, three penalties, two holding penalties.
Yeah, we were all cautiously optimistic about Andre James replacing Rodney Hudson. Like, that's the one move this offseason where like it hurt and like felt wrong. Like, there's been moves that are like, okay, that wasn't great, but at least I understood why. Rodney Hudson was just like, okay, we're gonna miss him. We're really gonna miss that corner. And Andre James has certainly got some growing pains. And again, like, we gave him the benefit of the doubt because Tom Cable vouched for him, and look, Tom Cable, he's the one coach on that coaching staff that's like proved his mettle, and we'll believe him. Like I said, hopefully it's one of those things where he gets better as the season goes on, gets to jive with Derek Carr a little bit. Hopefully Richie Incognito gets back in and can stay somewhat healthy this season, help him along, you know, ass to his ass.
Calais Campbell is not easy to play against, but here's the problem, guys. It doesn't get any easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got Cameron Hayward, and Tyson Alualu. That they're the tackles for the freaking Steelers. That's not going to be fun, man. That's not going to be fun this next game. Let's get on to the bad Snead. His one opportunity, fucking dropped it. That was pretty.
He could have been Zay Jones. He could have been the hero, right? He could have been the walk-off game-winning touchdown. He's the hero against his old team, the Ravens, carried off the field, Monday Night Football. Derek Carr could have been the one giving the speech about Willie Snead. Instead, boop, 8 serving 3, volleyball set to the DB. Who would have been the bigger, like, if we would have lost, like, just imagine how much hate, rightfully so, Alex Leatherwood and Willie Snead would have got. Like,
they both would have gotten a ton of heat.
Like, all that, like, clutch, that clutch play from Derek Carr, clutch play from Bryan Edwards, Daniel Carlson just crushing 55 yarders, and then you get a false start on the 1 yard line, or you completely miff a pass. Like, they would have been
rough.
They would have been.
That was bad.
I don't know what the hazing is in the Raiders locker room, but whatever it was, they would have gotten it. Swirlies, wedgies, and rightfully so.
That was bad, but it wasn't ugly. The ugly was the injuries.
Yeah, it cost us.
Four pretty bad injuries here. Mariota re-injured his quad. He missed most of the training camp and all the preseason with a quad injury. And he re-injured his quad on his one play.
So I guess Marcus Mariota is good for 31 yards each game before he gets hurt. Let's be like, all right, if we need 31 yards, let's get our one play to Mariota before something breaks on him.
It's like third and 30. I got to
break
play.
Glass if needed, and then break Mariota when needed. Yeah. We'll just throw him in there. He'll do something, get hurt. Oh, and Peterman wasn't even active. Like if that, we would have been out of quarterback.
That would have been scary. Who would have taken snaps? Maybe just Wildcat.
I wonder who is there. They have to have an emergency quarterback. Like they have that, you know, an ex receiver or something, right?
Maybe the punter. Usually the punters are ex, or the
Maybe
I've seen that happen a lot. All right, here we go. The ugly, the injuries. Mariota's quad, Ngakoue's hammy. It's a little bit more serious than we initially thought.
Yeah, because he wasn't carted out or anything. He just kind of like stood on the sidelines. Like, okay, maybe just.
And they had to take his helmet away from him, which tells me that he wanted to go back in. So I'm like, okay, maybe it wasn't that bad. But from all accounts, he's seriously questionable for this week against the Steelers. And unfortunately, we lost a couple of soldiers. Gerald McCoy, what could have been? He looked so good against the 49ers.
We saw that coming. Carted out. You're like, okay.
His face, and his face, he had that like that no affect on his. He just blank stare. It was. I felt terrible for the guy, man.
Was it someone that ACL out for the season?
Yeah, he's done. And so was Denzel Good. I felt terrible for him too, man. He finally cashed in. He was bouncing around, played for the Colts, came to us. You know, established himself as one of the leaders there on the offensive line, and just tore his ACL on his knee. So, you know, Godspeed, you guys. It's tough injuries to come back from. McCoy, we don't know. You don't know if you're going to be able to come back again. Maybe you're going to call it a career. Maybe not. Maybe you want to, you know, see if you can make one more run at it. But, you know, two season-ending injuries in a row. Not sure how that's going to work out for you. But that's the ugly, the injuries.
So our line, defensive and offensive, the ones that got hurt, you know, hit with injuries the most. Offensive line, both our starting guards potentially out. Good out forever. Who knows when Richie Incognito will come back. And those are the two guys that are supposed to be the veterans helping cover Andre James, the center.
As Alec Leatherwood, too.
And then Alec Leatherwood on the right. So that's rough. The defensive line, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think we'll be okay. Like you mentioned, Carl Nassib played phenomenal with only 15 pass rush snaps. Clay Farrell, healthy scratch, is what we're being told. John Gruden was kind of weird. He's like, yeah, he has some back issues, blah, blah, blah. But he wasn't listed on the injury report. So either Gruden's just kind of like
massaging
lying. Yeah, like massaging a little bit or just straight up lying. Probably that. But
wouldn't be surprised.
Clay Farrell isn't bad. Like he's a fine rotational player. Like I'm glad to have him on the team and rotate in there with the defensive line. Like he can play tackle, he can play end. He's, you know, but again, you're always graded by where you're drafted and what you're paid, right? So when you're drafted fourth overall, he looks like he sucks, right? So
Abram came back, made it happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's hope Farrell could come back and make it happen too.
Yeah. So with Carl Nassib, maybe now starting Clay Farrell back in the mix, hopefully it's not the end of the world with McCoy out for this, Gerald McCoy out for the season, and Yannick Ngakoue, you know, how many, he may not miss any games, but it may be a couple. So not a terrible place to be, but it's shocking that we have depth in the defensive line and we can be kind of like semi-confident in the rest of them playing.
Man, I just don't know, dude. We'll never know. But it just seems like there's a lot of injuries happening this first week. And, I mean, it's like they're going to happen in preseason or they're going to happen in the regular season. They're going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's tough. It's. I hate losing those guys because we need those big guys, man. We needed that pass rush up the middle. That would have been a game changer to have McCoy up the middle. It's a shame.
It
man.
Felt like the beginning of something special with that pass rush Monday night. Like it felt like, wow, like, is this going to be a thing like moving forward? Like, is this going to be like, can we depend on our defensive line forever? Like is this a thing that's going to be in our future? Regular basis? Like, damn, man. It's like, I don't know. It's like hooking up with a chick in, like, in your apartment building. You're like, whoa, she's right down the street? Like, or she's right down the hall? Like, this is going to be a regular thing. Like, I have access to this all the time. This is great. And then, nope, her boyfriend's back in town.
She gets back with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Shame. He was just gone for the weekend. Like, oh, yep. Shit. Like, you know, that.
Enjoy the good life while you got it. And I will never forget Monday night against the Ravens. It was a thing of beauty. So coming up, short week, long travel. Got the Steelers coming up on Sunday. Joining us next, Jimmy Smith. No, not Jimmy Smith from the Ravens. Jimmy Smith, you saw him commentating on Bellator fights, UFC fights. Now he's calling WWE Raw on Monday nights. Giant Steelers fan. So he joins us next right here on the Autumn Windbags. And joining us now, you've seen him in Bellator broadcast, UFC broadcast, PBC broadcast, doing commentary. Now you'll see him in WWE Raw on Mondays. You also hear him 4 days a week now on SiriusXM's Fight Nation. Jimmy Smith, our friend.
Oh, my God. I would say it's great to be here, but when I look at the graphic, under me and above me is Raiders. So I'm really not thrilled to be here. First time I've been on podcast, like, not thrilled to be here. Not at all thrilled to be here.
It's like black hole light is what we're trying to make everyone feel like. Normally people are stoked about it. You, as a diehard Steelers fan, I probably not so much.
And I don't have any neck tattoos, so I just don't fit in.
How do we know your first, middle, and last name if you don't
exactly
have
how do we know that? How do you know what team I like if I don't have it tattooed on my face like a Raiders fan?
Well, thanks for coming on. I got you on not just because your name is Jimmy Smith, and I thought people would be confused and think you were the Jimmy Smith on the Ravens to try to get like some extra clicks.
Views. Totally. The jazz musician. There are a million of us out there.
There's like, you know, with such a unique and crazy name like James Smith. You know, I want to get to, you know, market confusion. They say is a good idea. But you're diehard Steelers fans, we were talking about this on the show today. Yes, we're rivals. Yes, the history between the Raiders and Steelers is one of the best in NFL. Does it feel like rivalry week though in 2021 Steelers and Raiders? Do you feel that way when not really, right?
Not dude, when I was a kid, man, and I'm a little older than you. I think I'm significantly older than you actually. Never mind. So it's when I was a little kid, Raiders Steelers was like this Super Bowl. And we didn't meet all the time, obviously. We're not in the same division. So Raiders Steelers were really the powerhouses in the AFC when I was a little kid. Mm. And the reason I am a Steelers fan is because of that rivalry. So it was a big deal, man. And it felt like rivalry week. And it's almost, and I don't, there's a reason. I mean, the Browns Steelers were in the same division. So I understand that, but like Browns Steelers doesn't feel that big to me anymore. Just because we thumped the Browns. They're finally good again. But for so many years, we just thumped the Browns and people are like, oh, they're the big rival. I'm like, I hate the Ravens. I couldn't care less about the stupid Browns, but it's the Ravens I hate. So the thing that kind of made us rivals for so many years hasn't been there in quite a while. They haven't been great at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I only have so much hate in my heart to give, you know, right, I feel like there's a lot, but I got Chiefs, Broncos and Chargers to worry about. I don't know how much like calories I can burn hating the Steelers.
Yeah.
You know,
I still hate the Raiders though. I do, but I was pulling for you guys Monday. I hate the Ravens. So did I not text you? Like, all right,
you did.
Please beat the Ravens. Like, look, we can have a truce this 1 week because Steeler Nation is on your side, right?
I forwarded your text to Darren Waller and Derek Carr, and they reciprocated.
And look what happened. Look what happened. That was a crazy game, by the way.
Did anything the Raiders do make you nervous for Sunday?
Anything the Raiders did make me nervous?
Yeah, like for when we play on Sunday.
Your offense is damn good. You're offensively great. Your defense isn't wonderful. It's Carr's, like, how can I put this? If the Raiders were a fighter, you just throw bombs hoping something lands, and sometimes it does, but you'll take a shot to give a shot. It's, you know, like with the Raiders, you just never know exactly what you're gonna get. And so there are a lot of things we did Sunday, even though we beat the Bills, which is a miracle. We were 6.5 point dogs. We won by 7. Our defense isn't going to score 17 points every game. Like, it's one of those things where Steeler Nation, we're all freaking out. And I'll tell you about the bet I made with my treacherous backstabbing crew, by the way. And I want to know your take on this.
Okay. But
I didn't walk out going, woo, Steeler Nation. I was like, dude, we won that game. Yeah. Are you kidding? Like how bad we looked in the first half. I couldn't believe we won. I'm not sitting there going, woo, Super Bowl bound. I'm going, it's a miracle we won that game. Our defense is going to keep us in a lot of games, but you can't rely on the other team to hand you 17 points every week. So I don't feel it's more I'm worried about the Steelers than I'm worried about the Raiders. You know, the Raiders have always been talented, strangely overachievers, where you'll have just a mere amazing game one week and then look like an amateur team the next. It's really weird, you know?
Yeah, like when you like just look up like the score, you're like, oh, Steelers beat the Bills? Like, wow, this is crazy. This is awesome. Yeah. But like if you watch the game, you're like, ugh, like it was ugly. Like it was ugly both ways. Like I generally thought to myself, like I was just kind of like, you know, watching that game between other games on Sunday. Like I was a little more worried about the Steelers before that game than after, which is weird considering they beat the Bills. Like, when I looked at the schedule, I thought, okay, the hardest game of the season is going to be the Steelers because it's a road game, short week, and Ben Roethlisberger's not hurt yet. Because you know he's going to be in a walking boot by like week three.
At some point, yes.
You know what I mean?
He's going to get like line,
that big fat face and start swelling, you know? He's going to like, he's going to get beat up as time goes on. It's like, oh, we're getting him fresh. We're getting them fresh and on a short week and East Coast. After that Bills game, I was like, there's some holes there, man.
Yeah, we don't look great at all. And it's great that our defense looks so good. That is fantastic. I love Steeler football. And one of the things, of course, you know, the Steel Curtain. And we harass the Bills just nonstop with our defense, which is great. But the reliance on that as your scoring mechanism is always scary to me when it's like, hey, we scored 20. Well, they're not going to fumble every time. You might hold them on. You got to score points. Our O-line looked like garbage in the first half, finally kind of got it together in the second half, but it's held together with spit and glue. And it's once it starts gelling, maybe it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to ask you about that I've heard a lot of is with this whole COVID, not great practices, not long preseason, all this stuff. Teams aren't going to really gel for like 4 or 5 weeks. And mm-hmm. in that regard, I thought the Raiders were gelling very, very well when they weren't getting in their own way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and also specifically the Raiders, because Gruden didn't have hardly any starters play any preseason snaps at all. Like other than like the rookies and a couple like brand new guys, they got some snaps, but like Carr not one. Starting offensive line other than Leatherwood, not one, only like one or two defensive starters even got a snap in the preseason. And that's why, and that obviously comes with benefits where no one got hurt in the preseason, which is great. But on the flip side, like Derek Carr's first quarter and a half of that game was maybe the worst I've seen Carr in years. Like I thought him versus Tampa Bay last season was the worst I'd seen Derek Carr. He was atrocious. He missed wide open Ruggs one time, wide open Waller deep one time, misfiring, jittery. But then, like, there's this weird clutch gene that Derek Carr doesn't get any credit for, despite all the numbers saying it. He does it in prime time all the time. This fantastic clutch gene that he never gets credit for, and it clicked in, threw for like 450 yards, 55 attempts, no run game. So you know the Ravens, who blitz more than any team in football, are just peeling their ears back and going after him, and he just put up a career day. And it's like no love for him at all, despite like what he always puts out.
Is it partly to me? It's I wouldn't say it's as bad as the Cowboys in a sense, but that idea that we have, and it's so funny. You know, the psychology of a team. What is a team? I mean, the collection of uniforms, essentially. I mean, the players rotate, coaches rotate. I mean, you know, the Raiders are seen as. And as a Raiders fan, it sucks, but you got to admit it. You're seen as – I remember years ago, Marty Schottenheimer said about the Raiders. He goes, keep it close. You'll win it in the end. And remember, he was a longtime Chiefs coach. And he said, my philosophy playing the Raiders was if you keep it close, eventually they'll fuck it
they'll
up.
Blow it.
They'll somehow blow it in the end. And it's almost like that straitjacket is hard to take off. When that was like – almost the Raiders for 20 years was, they're talented and they can score in bunches and all that stuff. But if they'll kill themselves with penalties or they'll do something dumb, they'll give it away in the end. And as you say, even though the stats don't support that with Carr, he's almost saddled with that. Is that fair? You know what I mean? It almost feels like that to me.
Well, he's been saddled with what the Raiders have been doing wrong for his entire career, right? Like he's been on literally like some of the worst defenses in football in the 7 years. Now in his eighth season, like no joke. So crazy stat that I picked up and I mentioned on my show multiple times. Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady have played a combined 37 seasons before this season, right? 37 seasons, right? Their worst defense on their respective teams at in 37 combined seasons, their worst defense was better than Derek Carr's best defense in seven seasons. The Raiders had the 20th ranked defense in 2016, the year that we went, 12-4, and then Carr got hurt, went to the playoffs. That's nuts. Like, we're literally asking Derek Carr to
win
do
this
something
game,
that Tom
game.
Brady and Ben Roethlisberger haven't been able to, haven't even had to attempt, let alone had to do. But, it's outside looking in, right? If you're an NFL, analyst and you're paying attention to 32 teams and you're like, all right, team keeps losing. Derek Carr's the quarterback. We blame Derek Carr. And it's just, it's just this like binary thinking of just like team success and quarterback are 100% correlated and no difference in between. It's like, they Raiders didn't even have a good defense. They were just slightly less than atrocious defense. And they went 12-3 under Derek Carr. That's nuts.
It reminds me a little bit of the only baseball players that have a win-loss record are pitchers.
Yep.
Why? Like, what do you want me to strike out everybody? Like, Jesus Christ, how about you play some defense? But help me out.
And I get a quarterback should be held more responsible than the other 52 players on the team, right? Like, but like 100, like all of that problem, like it was a top 10 offense last season. It was literally the worst defense in Raiders history.
Yes.
The 2020 Raiders gave up more points than any other team in Raiders history. Like, you're just like, oh, Derek Carr, you couldn't pull him through. What a loser. Yeah. The guy can't win. So that's why like this pass rush that came out of nowhere on Monday night with, Max Crosby got defensive player of the day of the week for the AFC. Yannick Ngakoue is now there. Gerald McCoy, who is now on IR. Yep. It's like, wow. You sort of kind of pester the other person's quarterback, and now we can make a game of it. It's like, whoa, what are the odds? What a novelty.
What a concept, right? And it's that kind of thing. When you say, are you worried about the Raiders? The problem is they, as you put up, they can throw touchdowns with anybody. They can score points with anybody. Their defense is suspect, but I don't think that's going to be an issue against us where our offense just isn't great. So it's almost like the Raiders taking them on as a Steelers fan plays to all of our weaknesses where they can wear our defense out. And then we can't score any points if you don't fumble the ball or throw us an interception. So I think the Raiders in many ways play to our strengths. But one thing about being a Raiders fan that's got to kill you, and it's a little bit like being a Steelers fan, I guess, is everyone in your division hates you. They talk about the Raiders like they're the Broncos, Chiefs, Chargers. Talk about the Raiders in a way they don't talk about the other teams in the division. And I think it's a similar thing with the Steelers. It's just everybody hates the Steelers in our division. So it's almost like every game for you guys is a rivalry game. Every single one. It's not like anyone in the division is like, oh, Raiders, whatever. Everybody hates the Raiders. It's just part of, I don't know, the culture of the Raiders. I don't even know how to say it, but it's true.
Raiders fans have a weird, almost like battered girlfriend syndrome where we constantly complain that people hate us. We never get the love that we think we deserve. All of our players suck. They don't get notoriety, but we kind of revel in it too. We kind of wear it like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
It's like a prison tattoo. Like you had to get it, but now that you're on the outside, you're just like, yeah, I'm not going to cover it up. Like that's the truth. Like there was literally a, some firm did some, I'm going to completely butcher this, but there was some firm that did this analysis of the amount of negative social media interaction of all the pro teams and NBA, NHL, and it was the United States and Canada. Raiders were number one. There was more negative things.
I'm not even a little surprised.
Like more negative things said about the Raiders than any other franchise, more than the Knicks, more than the Pistons, like more than
guys who haven't seen a title in 30 years, right?
Yeah, teams like we're really so like we're really a thorn in the side historically of the Chiefs the last 10 years, right? Like what?
Right.
But it's just like it's just been ingrained in people, and also on the flip side, like Raiders fans have embraced it. Like it's we're part of it. Like we oftentimes play victim a little too much too, right? Just like, oh, everyone hates us and that's why things are falling apart. But it's part of the identity of being a Raiders fan is that, everyone's going to hate us and we're going to roll with it.
Yeah, but it's the whole reason I'm a Steelers fan. I don't know if you know this story or not.
I don't. I'm very curious because you were born in Fresno.
Yeah, Wikipedia is wrong. I was not born in Fresno.
Was? Okay. I just know he was Long Beach, Jimmy. So I was like,
from Long Beach, right? Yeah. What happened was I spent my first 9 years in the San Joaquin Valley when I was a little kid. So for some reason, somebody on Wikipedia assumed I was born in Fresno, which is in the San Joaquin Valley. Yeah. So apparently, I think I was born in Fresno. I was not born in Fresno, by the way.
Okay.
But
this is how you know you don't write your own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, no, I don't. So
location is done wrong.
It says Fresno, California. I was not born in Fresno, California. So I grew up in Southern California my whole life. When I'm 5 years old, it's 1982, for people who don't know the math or how old I am.
87. Yeah, you're 87 years old.
I'm ancient. So I have a cousin. All my cousins were Cowboys and Raiders fans. And as one cousin, she's a huge Raiders fan. I hated the Raiders. I just hated them. And
did you hate your cousin? And so like by proxy, you hated the
kind
Raiders?
Of, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of the deal. But also, you saw Straight Out of L.A., right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, that was like my childhood. When do you remember the player who went, oh, yeah, you couldn't take your family to a game, they'd get stabbed. And that was like a player like on the field was like, no, I never took my kids to a game. Like, I don't want them to get killed or see a stabbing or, you know, that's how it was. Raiders fans were the worst fans. And by the way, I lived in Southern California, surrounded by them, and it was – they were the worst fans. They were awful. They would literally start fights everywhere they went. You talk about wearing it on their sleeve. It was just, but it was
like, with us or against us. It was
And it was like an aggressive F everybody. Love, you know, like the back windows in Southern California a lot of times is F the haters and a big Raiders. And I'm like, what team does that? Like, they thrive on just, I'll run your car off the road and stab you because I'm a Raiders fan. And
yeah.
I hated Raiders fans. So, because they were all around when I was a kid, because they were the LA Raiders at the time. And they were awful. And I'm like, these people are dicks. And so, Steelers Raiders was a huge rivalry in the early 80s, as we opened this show saying. Mm-hmm. And so, their biggest rival at the time was the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, when I would sit there with my cousin and watch games, I would root for the other guy. Like, yeah, I'm going for the Steelers. And the way they played football, I love the way they played football.
Yeah.
At the time, I mean, it was just, you know, these great defenses. And I love the way the Steelers played football. So that's why I became a Steelers fan, was in rebellion to all the Raiders fans around me growing up in Southern California. And just, I used to go to a Browns bar. A friend of mine was a Browns fan or whatever. And when I lived in LA, and we would go to this Browns bar and watch games sometimes. And I had all my Steelers shit on, and I didn't get one single problem. Every time I went to a Browns, you know, I would talk a little shit, whatever, but no big deal. Yeah. In a Raiders bar, you got to be ready to fight. It's just – and Raiders fans know that. They don't deny that. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, I'm going to start a fight with you. I'm like, that's just normal for you every Sunday? Oh, yeah, every Sunday. I'm starting to fight at a sports bar.
I go to church, and I stab somebody at a bar.
And I stab somebody at a bar you know, La Mirada or something. You're like, Jesus, really? And so that's one of the reasons I cannot stand Raiders fans is, as you said, that, like, wearing it on your sleeve that we hate everybody and everybody hates us. It's just part of being a Raiders fan.
Yeah, we're like the Taliban, but a little bit more animosity.
Yeah, no, you less I mean? Friendly.
Yeah, right? Exactly. We're not that sunny disposition that they do over there. So it's funny, like, how differently wired we are, because like we grew up roughly the same time in the same area.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I became a Raiders fan.
You grew up in Long Beach? Are you a native? You're a Huntington Beach
guy. I was Huntington Beach. I was born in Long Beach Memorial and then lived in Huntington Beach through my high school, like middle school years, moved to Long Beach in my 20s.
Gotcha.
So in, I think I was like,
by the way, people don't understand Long Beach geography. That's like 15, 20 minutes. It's not like we drive pretty quickly from Huntington Beach to Long Beach. It's not.
I crossed county lines to go from Huntington Beach to Long Beach. There was traffic. It took me 7 minutes. It was brutal.
It was awful as hell. Brutal.
Yeah. But I went to I don't remember the game. I was a little kid. I was 8 years old, and it was the last season the Raiders were in LA, and I went to a game at the Coliseum. First football game ever.
94, 95?
Something. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Be like that. And then I remember being a little kid watching football at the Coliseum and be like, oh, that was a good play. Oh, look, there's a fight. Oh, that's a good play.
Yeah.
Oh, look, those four Mexican guys are beating up that girl. Oh, look, there's it was like, what is going
everywhere,
on here?
Everywhere, yes.
And I loved it. I ever these seen are
my
people. Kid.
I have I found like, my niche in life.
Come to me, my friend.
RJ Clifford, right?
Anoint me, right? Where's the line for the head tattoo? Like, this is like, and that was it. Like, it's the same reason why I'm in MMA. Just like this epitome for like, wow, this is nuts. This is crazy. I'm stimulated by it. It's bonkers. And it just hooked me ever since I was a little kid. Just that kind of like just bad. And I don't get in street fights, but it was type of like that level of passion for something that kind of inanimate. And you're just like, going to do whatever. Yeah. I'm intrigued. Sign me up. Let me figure out what this is about.
Yeah. See, I find that like a distraction. I'm like, really? Are we, you know, I can't stand it. And so that's one of the reasons I just don't like typically Raiders fans. I mean, things have changed, right? They're different than when I was a kid. But yeah. when the players on the team almost took it for granted that they couldn't take their kids there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, no, I can't take my kid to the Coliseum, you know? And also, by the way, I went to a Rams game a few years ago, and the Coliseum hasn't changed at all. I don't know if you've been back for any reason. It hasn't changed since I was 2. It isn't any more comfortable or modern or easy to get into or out of.
Well, they're in a catch-22 because they'll lose their like historical monument status if they like put cushions on seats.
Right. Like, it's so, like, it's just, you know, miserable anything. Place to watch a game, right?
Yeah.
It's the worst.
The actual Colosseum in Rome that's 2,000 years old is a better facility.
Way more comfortable. I've been to both, and I'm telling you, the Colosseum in Rome is way more comfortable, way more updated. I got Wi-Fi at the Colosseum. Don't get in the Colosseum in LA.
The mega screen at the Colosseum in Rome is like all perfect.
Totally different.
Yeah, it's trash. So it's funny how like when you think of like different rivalries and teams and how they develop, and like the Raiders and Steelers were, you know, a good one. When you think of like Steelers and how they're viewed now, it was so weird last season seeing the Steelers be 9-0. And like no one was giving them a chance to like do much in the postseason. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember when they were like the last undefeated team in football?
We were 11-0 at one point.
11-0, right? That's what it was. Yeah. Remember you're like 9-0, 10-0, 11-0, and still no one's really talking about them. You weren't either, right? Like you were reveling in the win streak.
Sure,
like,
I remember, like my crew, right? Yeah,
you're just kind of like, dude, we got some problems, blah 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 blah.
But we kept winning by like 1 point against garbage teams, and then we take on a great team and win by 1 point. It was never like, let me put it this way. You can win a fight and then there's like Anderson Silva, Chris Lee, when you go, oh, this dude is special. Yeah. Or you're Elias Theodoro or like Sam Alvey, where you win. Like, how do you keep winning? Yeah. Like what? And Sam Alvey is like by the way, I love Sam Alvey. He's a really nice guy. Personally, he's great. I'm like, how do you win? Because he would always do just barely enough to win a split decision, and it would work. And you're just like, you're not big. You're not strong. You don't have any remarkable qualities at all. And yet you somehow keep winning fights. Elias Theodoro, like, how do you – we were the Elias Theodoro of the NFL. We kept winning, but it was always ugly. It was never – we didn't look dominant. We never – like, if you're 11-0, there should be one time where you look clearly better than every other team.
Yeah.
And we never looked clearly better. The Chiefs had games where they were like, oh my God, these guys look amazing. The Bucs did. We were the only team that didn't have one game where we looked great. 11-0. We didn't look great in one single game. That was why I didn't either. Which is like weird. It's like this weird anomaly, you know?
Yeah. And then and it all comes up, like it eventually gets to you. Like Sam Alvey like hasn't won a fight in like 7 fights.
Eventually
like the numbers are going to like regress to the mean, and we're going to like know where we're supposed to be.
And I knew it would. I didn't think we'd go anywhere. I didn't think we'd get blown out by the Browns, but I was like, yeah, our run's going to stop pretty soon. And it was just obvious at the end that this weird train that I was just starting to grow. Like the wheels just started to come up. Like, you just get to the finish line. Did you ever see, there's this, and I expect you to look it up, you know, there was an Iron Man with these two women and they hit the wall at the same time, 20 yards from the finish line. Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
I'm intrigued. Right. It's like a 1996 Iron Man race or something. And these two women literally used up their last electrolyte 20 feet, and they both kind of go, it's like they hit an electric fence. I'm not joking. Yeah. Two of them. And they're like trying to get, you know, their body's just shutting down, literally shutting down. And they are crawling to the finish line, and their friends and family on there's like, can't help them or else they're disqualified.
Yeah.
So they're literally like trying to out crawl one another to the finish line. But that was the Steelers. Like, God, like they suddenly their game hit below empty right at the finish line. And I was like, oh God, this is not going to end well. But it's on YouTube right now. Just Google, like, you know, finish line, you know, Iron Man. And these two women just at the same time, It's like they hit an electric fence. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts how like when you're in competition with somebody and you're both like, as soon as you see like weakness in one, you're like, I'm allowed to give weakness now. You know, like how you like fight down to your competition sometime or fight up to your competition sometime. Just like wired that way. It's weird. How much longer is Ben Roethlisberger going to play?
This is it.
Yeah.
This has got to be his last year.
Gotta be it, right?
After this year, there are hard decisions he doesn't want to be on the end of.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that conversation where the coach is, okay. When Mike Tomlin sits you down and goes, we got to think about the future. We got to draft high. We got to get a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's just, do you want to be that person? You know Mercedes Terrell from Bellator?
Oh, yeah.
Mercedes, yeah. Love her to death. Great friend. And she left Bellator. And, you know, we were talking like the week after. And I was, hey, man, you know, what's going on? You know, and she's like, look, you age out eventually. And I didn't want to have, like, I want to transition to other stuff other than, you know, I got to diet like crazy to hold up a number. So she understood at some point that conversation's coming. I want to get ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ben Roethlisberger right now. Like, okay, after this year, we got to make some really tough choices about our future. And we don't want to disrespect Ben effing Roethlisberger, who's won two Super Bowls for us, appeared in three. We don't need this. You know what I mean? So I definitely agree with that. This should be his last year. I think it will be his last year. I think his body is screaming for it to be his last year.
Because it's kind of a weird situation. Because like I remember like a good friend of mine, a guy named Mike Trevino, and he's a diehard Lakers fan, like has a Lakers tattoo on his leg, right? And when you remember the last two seasons of Kobe Bryant's year, like he was getting $25 million a season. He was done. And but that last contract, it was basically just like a gift to Kobe. Like, okay, we'll ruin our future. You got us five rings. Like, okay, here you go.
Here's your farewell tour. Here's 50 exactly. million. Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, I want that life
so bad, and we will never have it, RJ. No one will ever give us 25 million to suck at something, ever.
I mean, can I win one championship and get that? Like, I don't have to win five, right? Like, I can win one and get that.
It's so true, right?
But like, my conversation with him was like, is it really worth it to like nuke your team for more than two seasons, like multiple seasons, because you're not having a chance to develop? All that salary is going to somebody who's not going to be there anymore. Like, and you're just kind of decent enough to not get in the good draft pick. Like, it's, but he's like, no, Kobe got us five championships, pay him off, did it.
We deserve it. Him, are those
you,
2 years.
You right? owe him though. Are you like that with Ben Roethlisberger? You gave us two rings. All right. Because like, I feel like it kind of happened with Drew Brees in New Orleans. Like, you're the man, you're the savior of the city. You hang on as long as you want. We'll pay you whatever we want, whatever you want, because you're the man. Are you that way with Big Ben?
I get the feeling the last couple of years were like that. I'm not saying I don't feel that way. I'm saying I kind of did. I really thought they were making the last couple of years. And obviously he took a little pay cut to bring in some talent. So he's been like, okay, I'll be a good guy if I stick around as quarterback. If you were going to make that hard turn, they should have done it 2017, 2018. You know what I mean? If you were going to go like, oh man, like we don't want him for the last couple of years, that should have been the time to me.
Yeah.
Now I think we're at the end of that, where they said, okay, 2017, 2018, he clearly wasn't throwing the ball like he used to, wasn't as strong, wasn't as mobile. So that timer started then and it's running up now. So I feel like we did make those decisions, and that this is the end of those decisions. Whether or not this was said to anybody, I would be, God, I don't want to use the word disappointed, but I would be unpleasantly surprised to be hung around after this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I go, all right, dude, don't make this ugly. Don't make us trade you. Don't make us do that fucking old man tour that nobody wants to see or hear when it comes to Kobe Bryant, right? I don't want those years.
Yeah.
I don't want Shaq in a Celtics uniform for a year. Like that just, ugh, I don't want to see it.
I don't want to book you against Vitor Belfort on a Triller card.
Right. Like a Vander Holyfield. That's our new analogy for failure. It's like, come on, don't Triller me, bro. Don't Belfort me in front of everybody. Yeah. It's a similar kind of thing. Like, just do it yourself. You know, don't make us do it.
Leave us.
It's not cool. I want your opinion on something, RJ, because you know my treacherous crew, Kelly and KOB. You're aware of them. Do you know about our bet and what they did?
I just saw that. I saw that there was a Steelers logo on Russo's Twitter handle, which
said, "We suck."
That says we, and it was like three poop emojis.
Yeah,
I don't feel like that was part of the bet.
Thank you. Yeah. So what he was supposed to do is change. The deal was, and I was taking on the effing Bills. Thank you. So it was guns for the Washington football team, KOB for the Giants, and Kelly for the Jets. And whichever team won by the most or lost by the least, all the rest of us had to change our social media platform profile picture to their logo of the winning team. Simple bet with a little for a week, right?
Yeah.
Simple bet, a little bit of dignity, right? You're pissed off every time you look at your social media. And he put up poop emojis with the Steelers thing and then put the Steelers logo to put "we suck" on it. And I'm like, you're just a sore loser. You're just being an asshole. And then Kelly didn't do anything and Guns didn't do anything. So they welched on me on the other half. And I'm like, so he was like, no, but it's the logo's there. I'm like, it's a poop emoji with the logo. You're just being a dickhead at this point. Am I wrong?
There's nothing lower on planet Earth than a man who welches on a bet.
Thank you.
There's nothing.
Right? No pride.
Nothing. Like you,
shaked like, in right, prison like a pedophile, right?
Like we're artificially adding these stakes to something for the sake of adding stakes to something, and you pull it away.
Right.
Like we're not at war. Like if you're at war, you cheat. Like if you're fighting, you cheat. Like we're we're inventing a conflict for the fun, and you've ripped the fun and soul right out of it through the asshole.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Right, exactly. And then what bugged me about it partly is like, and you know from working on SiriusXM, you and I have had some goofball bets, whatever. You know what I mean? Like it adds something that the fans like, right? Like, okay, they get to call him bus balls. You know, Marco from Waco called. He's a big Bills fan. And we made a little bet. And RJ, I'm not joking. I was sure I'd be the loser of this thing. I was sure. We're taking the Bills first week. Oh, my God. We're going to get killed. But screw it, right? Like, yeah, you know, take my loss for my team, right? It'll be fun. Marco called because we had a like or whoever the loser the loser has to tell the winner that the other team's their daddy and on air, right? He called and went, dude, Steelers are our daddy. They played way better than we did. Congratulations to Big Ben. Hope you guys have a great season. Bills did not play well at all. And kind of went on and did his bit. And so I'm kind of like, dude, I'm not betting you guys anymore for anything. Like, you know, you welch on me. Like, I'm not like, we're not doing this again. And it's like, it was a fun thing to do. And they totally, I agree with you, RJ. They should rip the soul right out of it, right?
Welching on a bet. It's like, I'd prefer you come into my house, kick my dog, pour all the booze I have in my bar down the sink.
I don't have that kind of time.
Spray paint graffiti all over the front of my house, then welch on a bet. Like, you disrespect me more by welching on a bet. Thank you. Than by like banging my wife. Like, that's more. I understand you wanting to bang my wife. I don't understand you welching.
Right, I understand the motivation for banging.
Yeah, like, okay, you're weak. You, know, you made your movie.
Kicked his coverage, by the way.
But like, yeah, like welching on a bet. There's nothing lower.
Nothing lower nothing on earth. Lower. My crew just they welch. It was just it was pathetic and sad, you know. And it also shows that they're like honoring a bet and making a bet like that, even in my sense, was stupid. We're 6.5 point dogs, right?
Yeah.
Hey, dude, I'm ride or die with my team, and the car went off the cliff, and I did not chicken out. I went right off the cliff with the team, right? So part of the welch on the bet is like, man, you don't love your team then. You know, if you weren't willing to take the bullet for your team, you're just not as much of a fan.
Yeah. And the bullet was changing your emoji.
Changing your emoji. Like, your social media for 1 week is on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook is a freaking whatever logo of the Steelers. Yeah. Like, really? Really?
And Kelly's social media is just thirst traps anyway. So it's like it's no one's
all
looking
her
at
in front of a mirror getting ready to go outside or a drink of some kind.
Exactly.
That's it. Those are the two things it is. It's a drink and her getting ready to go out. That's all.
Every time we talk about Kelly on our show, she's like, yeah, I just got like 9 more followers. It's like, yeah, because we're just talking about how you're like wearing tube tops and thirst trapping every time. Like, of course you're getting a lot of followers.
Yes, of course.
And it's the ones you want.
They're there for the articles. They're there for the input and science of what you are doing. Oh my God. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing too. Like, you know, stuff like that. You're like, yeah, you can get followers. All you have to do is be hot. That's literally the bar. That's where the bar is. And you have leapt over it.
You and I will spend like 10 minutes making sure like the formulate this tweet sounds right. Like, is a good analysis to get this
right.
Spell check. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, 3 likes, whatever. Kelly's just like, oh yeah, getting ready to go out. Psh. Oh my God. Everyone, this is going viral. Wow. Are those leather pants?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, it's weird how being female will do that. It's weird. We don't have that to lean on.
Yeah, the weaker sex. They've got it so rough, don't they? Yeah.
It's tough.
Poor them. Jimmy, this is great. You look awesome surrounded by Raiders in silver and black, by the way. I'm glad you came on here just for this look. I'm gonna screenshot this Send it to Russo. Send it to Kelly. You've never looked better.
I do like the Kings. So silver and black does have a little bit of meaning to me because, you know, I'm from SoCal. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Raiders, the only, which at the time were SoCal team, by the way. So I don't know. Yeah, anyway, only SoCal. I'm a huge Lakers fan. I support, I've been to a lot of Dodgers games and I support the Kings. It's just the Raiders, the only one. You know, choose one. All right. So what's our bet?
That one's perfect.
What's our bet for the Sunday?
Ooh, okay.
What the spread? It's just winners and losers.
Winners and losers. Ooh, yeah, okay. I haven't looked at the spread.
What is the spread?
It's got to be three or four Steelers, probably.
Where are we? We're in Pittsburgh?
Minus three or four. Yeah, you're in Pittsburgh. Yeah, Raiders short week. Everybody got hurt.
My guess is Steelers by 3.5.
It's almost exactly what I said. Steelers like 3 or 4.
Hit by 5.5?
Wow.
Jesus, take the Raiders. Take the Raiders on that. That's too wide. I really thought it'd be like 3, 3.5. You know what I mean? Like, a field goal, maybe more.
Maybe they're thinking like hangover game because, you know, it was Monday night, so emotional.
But once again, it's like no other team after beating the Ravens the way you guys did would get saddled with that. Would be 5.5-point dogs to the Steelers, who, by the way, did not look good in beating the Bills. So it's almost what we were talking about earlier on in this episode. It was like, dude, you're 5.5-point dogs. You just beat the Ravens, which are a better team. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In the same division. I don't get it. So fuck the spread, because that spread is ridiculous. Winners and losers, man. What's our bet?
Okay, so we both, for those who don't know, we both have shows on SiriusXM, the same channel, Fight Nation. The winner gets to write up a 100-word essay, and the loser has to call into the other person's show and recite that essay.
I like that. So that's okay. You know what's great? Okay. That can be yours if you win. Mine for your show. For your show.
Okay.
Music to begin and close show is Steelers theme. That's it. Fight song for the Steelers.
Okay.
You're coming on air with that. Coming on air with that. That's your music of the day is the Steelers fight song.
Okay, that works because obviously, like, I co-host, so I'd have to like run it by Dean. He doesn't care about football. He wouldn't even know. Like Steelers? Is that a factory somewhere that I don't know about?
There you go. Perfect. So, and then if you guys win, you write what I will call into your show, and whatever it is, I got to recite it.
And we'll put the Autumn Wind soundtrack in the background just to kind of like have it really deliver correctly. And I know
Chariots of Fire, but we're, you know, tomato.
No. Something classier. And so because of like all this like welching talk that we've had on this show, like we're both going to have to deliver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like now, like we've put each other in the corner perfectly. We're like, oh, welching's the worst thing in the world.
So run
to cash in, huh?
Do your show nude. There you go. Like, oh, hey. Can't welch. What do you want?
All right. The stakes are high.
Appreciate you, brother. High. All right.
Good seeing you, buddy.
Anytime. Steeler Nation. Talk to you soon.
All right, so coming up on Sunday, Raiders short week flying to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. The Steelers, of course, are 1-0, same as us. My big thing when I was looking at that pass rush and seeing like Lamar Jackson like do Lamar Jackson stuff and like evading guys and like getting out of there and stuff, my thought was, oh, if that was Ben Roethlisberger, he would be flat back right now. Mm-hmm. If that pass rush that we saw Monday night happens on Sunday, it's going to be a good day.
Yeah. It's a lot of weird things happened in that game, the Steelers game, that really skewed statistics. And the reason I bring that up is because, like what you said, the pass rush was so good that if that's Big Ben, we're going to get him on the ground a lot.
Yep.
Well, the thing is, even though their offensive line didn't play great, they were overall ranked in the low 50s, which really isn't that good. It's like it's a little below average.
Mm-hmm.
Big Ben was only pressured on 17% of his dropbacks. That was the best in the NFL. And the reason for that is the quick passing. He threw a lot of wide receiver screens, a lot of short to intermediate passes. How do you stop a pass rush? How do you beat a blitz? Short passes. And that's what Big Ben does. So we'll see how that works.
And that's Gus Bradley's weakness not weakness, but that's how you beat a cover three defense, right? Great, we play not a prevent, but like keep everything in front of us, tackle smart, play zone, don't let anyone get behind us, keep everyone in front of you. And that's exactly what Ben Roethlisberger does. So it's like, I think though, like if we're going to force the Steelers to dink and dunk for four straight quarters,
you won't do it.
We should be in a pretty good place, right? Yeah, eventually he's going to break and want to go deep. They've got some good wide receivers.
He did do it against the Bills. Mm-hmm. He did do that. And that's why he was the lowest rated quarterback PFF in week one, because he started to force the ball down the field more, and that's when he got into trouble. So this defense, I feel, is perfect against a Ben Roethlisberger because he's itchy. He's not going to just take what you give him. He's going to want to push the ball further down the field, and he's going to get restless, and he's going to make mistakes. And add the pressure on top of that, this looks – it's shaping up to be a good matchup for us, our defense against their offense. Now, if our secondary doesn't stay with these receivers, it's going to be a tough day for us because he has three really, really good receivers and a fourth, okay, good, decent receiver in Washington.
Yeah.
The thing about those three receivers, you have Juju Smith-Schuster, you have Deontay Johnson, and you have Claypool, right? Those three guys, they all do the same things well, but they all excel in one of these areas. Johnson's the speed burner. He's the guy that can go downfield and beat you with speed. Claypool is the bigger receiver. He can win those 50-50 balls, which they can all do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Juju Smith-Schuster, out of all of them, is the best route runner. But they're all the same. They all can run routes well, and they can all win 50-50 balls and take balls deep. So balls deep. You like that? I said it before.
You weren't even talking about Carl Nassib.
Will you stop? God damn it, RJ. They're going to shut us down, RJ. Stop.
You're the one that keeps making the puns. I'm the one that's trying to like temper things down and say you didn't make a sexual innuendo joke about Carl Nassib.
I did not. Okay. So that's what I feel. That's where the battle is for us, is being able to shut down the passing game of Ben Roethlisberger and forcing him to make those mistakes. When he does push the ball, when he shouldn't, we have to make plays. We have to break on the ball. We have to get turnovers in this game off of Big Ben's arm. We got turnovers last week off of fumbles and making keeping Lamar Jackson in the pocket. We need to get interceptions. We need to get those turnovers in the air against Big Ben, because he's not going to be able to dink and dunk the entire game. He's too restless for that. I watched the game twice, actually, against the Bills. It was a fucking nightmare game. It was an ugly game, penalties left and right. The defense played really well for the Steelers, but they were penalized 8 times for 80 yards.
It wasn't a game that made me fear either one of those teams. They're supposed to be like, the Bills are like this trendy pick to like win the AFC. People forget, like, even though the Steelers had a fall from grace last season, they started out 9-0.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it's like, these are supposed to be two teams to be feared. Like, they didn't play like two teams that were supposed to be feared at all. Like, I watched and I was like, I felt, even though the Steelers won in a game they shouldn't, I still walked away like,
they're beatable.
I'm less, yeah, like, hey, we could beat these guys.
Here's the problem. Defensively, they're still really good. Defensively, they made an MVP candidate, a big talk for MVP candidate, Josh Allen, made him look bad. He didn't look ordinary. He looked bad in that game. Yeah. So a couple things. Steelers defense. Now, we blitzed only 3 times, right? Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh only blitzed once. They only blitzed 1 time. And when you have that front four, you don't have to blitz ever.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And the only blitz, quote unquote blitz, that they counted was actually TJ Watt when he lined up as an inside backer. That's the one thing that they did too, is they moved TJ Watt all around. He was just pacing up and down, like, down by the where the linebackers were. He's like, okay, wherever I am when you snap the ball, I'm going to just rush the passer from here. Mm-hmm. So that was their only quote unquote blitz, was when TJ Watt blitzed from a linebacker spot, inside linebacker spot. Other than that, their defensive line caused 18 pressures, 11 hurries, 4 quarterback knockdowns, 3 sacks. Very similar to our game. Mm-hmm. Again, their defense was called for 8 penalties. Here's a good thing. They gave up 4.7 yards per carry against Singletary, I think it was like their leading ball carrier.
Yeah.
So they can be run on, because they're so intent on getting to the quarterback. So that's going to be very difficult for Leatherwood. I think I see another game for Carrier and Foster Moreau really anchoring down that right side with them and helping out.
Yeah.
Because man, that defensive front, their linebackers aren't, you know, Bush is good, but their linebackers aren't what they used to be. If you think of like a typical Steelers defense, those linebackers are crazy. No, they're solid. They're well coached, and they made it difficult for Josh Allen to throw anything intermediate. You got to throw the ball a little bit further down, but then you have Minkah Fitzpatrick, you have all those other guys down there. So their defense is going to be an ugly game, and I think that's how they win games. They make it ugly defensively for the other team.
Yeah, Derek Carrier and Foster Moreau aren't going to be wearing their ball catching gloves. They're going to be wearing their blocking gloves in this one. That's what they're going to be doing. This is a nice game, though, to kind of gauge where we're at, too, because the Ravens and Steelers are so different, right? Ravens super blitz happy. Steelers never do it. Ravens primarily a running game. Steelers primarily a passing game. Ravens get their pass rush from blitzing. Steelers get their pass rush from their down linemen. Like, it's a good way to gauge, like, okay, we beat this type of unique team. Can we beat this type of unique team? Which is a good, I just like early in season, like, obviously, I'd rather just play the Jets 17 times, right? Like, that's preferable.
We can't do that.
We can't. Is that okay? Can we do that? It's like those old, you see like these Brazilian fighters or Russian fighters come into the UFC and they're like 27-0.
Yeah.
It's like 24 cab drivers and like two ice cream men, you know?
The same guy six times.
That I wouldn't mind at all. But if we are going to play tough opposition, at least it's nice early in season to see, oh, how do we handle a run game? How do we handle a passing game? How do we handle this guy? I don't know that guy. Like, this is a nice, because they're super polar opposites in most ways in football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They both feed off of explosive plays, but they get there a different way. Mm-hmm. The Ravens, their deep shots were set up by the run. The Steelers' deep shots were set up by their short passing game. Harris looked, he had burst, but again, that line didn't block very well. He didn't have a lot of room, and he is a straight up liability out of the backfield. He dropped a lot of passes and he missed a lot of blocks. So there's going to be some opportunities for us to get to Big Ben. It's that defense, man. They want to out-tough you. Are you tougher than us? We're going to make this game ugly. We're going to play sound on special teams. They had a block punt and a scoop and score against the Bills, really kind of iced that game for them. But man, we have to have our big boy pants on, man. It's going to be a tough game, man. They're big and physical, and they don't let up. Now here's one thing that I didn't mention. They're down four linemen. They don't really switch them out a lot. They're talented, but they're thin. They don't really rotate a lot of guys. All four of those guys played a lot of snaps. So
like an Asian porn star. Talented, but then
Jesus. That's true. I'm trying
to paint a picture with my words, Soto.
When you see a curvy Asian porn star, that's kind of like stands out. You're like, oh shit. It's
like a golden unicorn. You're like, wow, right? That's crazy. That's awesome.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Does it feel like guys our age? Do the Steelers still feel like a big rivalry to you? You know, because like it was the rivalry in football like decades ago. Like,
that's like a decade, like a generation and a half before us.
Yeah, I feel like we're supposed to hate the Steelers, but I don't know. I only have so much hate in my soul, and I like to reserve it for the AFC West. You know.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about. I'm not like fuck the Steelers. I'm like, well, fuck that defense. Like, we need to figure something out with these guys.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that's my main concern. Is if we're going to have a letdown, this is a very bad team to play when you have such an emotional roller coaster game on your first game. Yeah. I don't want to have that letdown on a short week, have to have that long travel. Those things are working against us here. And you're going to face a team who's just going to punch you in the mouth. And they don't make mistakes, man. Those penalties, those were aggression penalties. Those were like jumping off sides because they're trying to get to the quarterback. It's not like they're going to blow coverages left and right. They're a very well-coached team, and their defense is tough. So
at the beginning of the season, this was, on paper, the toughest road game I thought on paper, because it's coming off a short week. It's early in the year before Ben Roethlisberger like gets hurt. He's like always in a walking boot, you know.
That blow, the
yeah, for sure, getting like the neck gut. So on paper, I was like, this might be our toughest road trip. The other time we're on the very East Coast, it comes after a bye week. So, and obviously we've got the standard issue tough ones, right? Playing in Kansas City is always hard, you know. But playing in Denver is always a pain. But I like our momentum. And again, like I said on our post game show, if this isn't a hangover game, if this isn't like everyone kind of deflates and is too busy like jerking each other off with how great the Monday night game is, instead turns their sights like, all right, we got Pittsburgh to worry about now. They have one day ahead of us on preparation. We got to catch up. If that's their mentality, I like what we're gonna do. Ready to do some what up winbacks?
Let's do it.
Okay, Wesley Williams, great show. 3 exclamation points. Regarding Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs, I think you're right. We don't know what they are, but Carr has to stop favoring certain receivers because he has a tendency of just eyeing the same dudes every game. To be honest, with the weapons Carr has, he should be spreading the ball around. We address this. You go to the hot hand, right?
If they don't stop Waller, why are you going to stop? We're going to stop throwing.
Why stop throwing to Waller? Like, why stop throwing to Renfro? And hopefully what turns out is defenses start double teaming Waller, double teaming Renfro, and then Ruggs and Edwards are wide open. That's the goal here, because I think that's going to be the plan moving forward, right? Waller, Renfro, that's who we're going to the bulk of the time. When defenses start adjusting, Edwards and Ruggs are good enough, even now in their second year and still not as good as we want them to be. They are good enough at certain things where we can give Edwards that jump ball. They stop paying attention to Ruggs, he will be open deep a couple of times a game. Yep. I'm opposite. I'm saying let's just focus in on the hot hand, and then we'll adjust when defenses adjust to that hot hand. I prefer that method than just like, oh no, equal distribution. Ooh. Every wide receiver needs touches.
Yeah, this is about being fair. Okay, this is about winning games.
Yep,
we're gonna do what we do best, and until you show us you can stop it, we're just gonna keep doing it. Mm-hmm. That's like you're killing the team running the ball. You're getting 7-8 yards a rip, right? But you start passing it because, you know what, you want to be balanced. If they're not stopping you running the ball, keep running the ball. Just keep doing it. Yep. Keep punishing them. And I understand what you're saying. And that did happen later in the game. But the thing is, Ruggs, Edwards, who else? Basically,
Willie Sneed.
He's talking about Ruggs and Edwards. They're not Darren Waller. Okay? So you see any team out there who has a target who's like an elite target, they're by far their best receiver or their best option, they're going to get the bulk of the work. And Waller's going to continue to get the bulk of the work. Once they started kind of breaking down and covering him, because a lot of those first quarter issues was, you know, Waller dropped a couple of passes too. But once, you know, okay, they show that they can stop it, or they show they could slow it down a little bit, let me start spreading the ball out. And then once you stop showing that attention to Waller, let's go right back to him. And that's what they did.
John Q, I like how we got a taste of the old Raiders' mistakes, followed up by the precision and perseverance needed to overcome those mistakes. Hopefully this game has given birth to the new Raiders' success we so look forward to enjoying. And I see this because we're like, the advantage we have of being like so balls deep and just like the Raiders, like we know everything that's going on. Like I feel like so often the national media like doesn't understand what's happening in the Raiders because they're covering 31 other teams. The disadvantage we have is that we see the warts the Raiders have, and we think they're these glaring giant weaknesses
that nobody else has.
All like watching football again, like watching Red Zone, watching other games on Sunday, because I didn't have the Raiders to focus on. I got to just watch football for fun. A lot of good teams have really big problems. Bills, Steelers, Chiefs, like skated by somehow. Like there are some really good teams with giant errors. And so when we're like, yeah, like Raiders are no different, right? Like we have the same number of errors, but we overcame them. We were able to persevere over them, which is exactly what John Q was saying. Is like, it was a nice eye opener, Soto, to just watch football on Sunday and see like, oh wow, really good teams have really good, really big problems. We're not the only ones.
Yeah, it's the explosive plays erase a lot of, you know, that's all I was saying. Big plays are like a Catholic priest, man. They take away your sins, but you know, if you're not careful, they end up fucking you. So
the old saying, yeah.
Yeah, the old saying that that I like to say.
Was so, that under yeah, was that yeah, under your yearbook photo? Was that your saying? Catholic priest?
No, my under my yearbook photo said it says in Spanish it was "Me llaman el calentón" or "El comal porque caliento las gorditas." So it means they called me like the, you know, that little pan that you cook tortillas on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's called the comal, right? So they call me that because I heat up gorditas, the fat girls.
Gotcha. Clever. Mine was a ladies from Rocky III. Yeah. Mr. SHS43. I don't know if that stands for something. Mr.
Shish43.
Shish Flare. I'm still worried about the Steelers. Big Ben is patient enough to quick throw and short game his way down the field with his wide receivers. A lot of talent with the wide receivers. Yeah, I disagree with you, Soto. I think their offense is like perfectly suited to like hurt our defense,
but Big Ben isn't.
He's a stationary Big Ben. Yeah,
he's gonna get restless. He's going to get restless. If you want to take a look team-wise, if you want to make a prediction, you look at their previous games.
Mm-hmm.
This team does this. This team does that. Individuals, you look at their career. Because guys they're not going to really change from who they've been. And Big Ben just happened to play that same exact way against the Bills. He dinked and dunked and this and that and all this. They scored, 19 offensive points? No. What was the final score of that game? 23-16 or some shit like that.
Yeah, low.
It was low. So they only scored one offensive touchdown and they had three field
goals. Speaking of low points, did you watch the pregame? And like when all the Steve Young, Randy Moss, and all them give their predictions. Randy Moss' prediction was Ravens 13-10.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
13-10. Did you think like the Raiders had this like amazing defense that nobody knew about and was gonna hold them to less than two touchdowns?
Maybe he believed in Gus Bradley.
Maybe.
No, but like the Bills defense is good. It's not like an amazing defense. Okay. Yeah. They're built on turnovers and they didn't really get a lot of turnovers. The Steelers scored one offensive touchdown, got three field goals, and they scored a special teams touchdown. So as far as that quick, short passing game, Big Ben showed he is who he is. He stays stand tall in the pocket. And he's not going to keep taking. He's going to want to create an opportunity for himself and throw the ball deep. And that's what gets him in trouble. And that's what we need to capitalize. So I agree with part of it. The short game is the game that's the game. If you can be consistent with it, that's how you're going to beat this Raiders defense. But you have to be consistent with it and you have to be disciplined. And Big Ben has shown that he's not that.
Yeah. All right, that's about it for us. I'm hopping on a plane here in a few hours, Costa Rica, for a bachelor party. So if you never hear from me again, it's because I'm buried on the beach by a bunch of drug lords who thought I was mulling cocaine across borders.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody special. I'm really
exactly how I knew it would be. All right, well, until that day, knock on wood if you're with me.